Hey, Juice, the only thing better than looking clean is looking clean on your own time.
No doubt about it, Big Seth, and that's why I always call my man Ara at A&T Dry Cleaners anytime I need my clothes laundered or dry cleaned.
Tell him exactly why you call Ara.
Because A&T offers free pickup and delivery at your home or office, so you never have the inconvenience of trying to find time to take your dry cleaning somewhere. They bring it to you.
That's exactly right, Juice. You can walk into their Fort Lauderdale location, but A&T serves Miami-Dade, Broward, and the Southern Palm Beaches with their convenient pickup and delivery services, which also include alterations, shoe repair, and more.
And A&T is a family-owned company, and they've been in business since 1980.
1980?
Yeah, and you know what? That means customer service is their priority.
So call Ara today at 954-610-9383. That's his personal cell we're giving you. Or you can visit drycleanertoyou.com to start making your life and your dry cleaning a lot easier.
And make sure you tell them that the Fish Tank sent you, because Ara, my man, is giving our listeners 50% off your first order.
How much?
50. Half, Seth. Wow. Half. And 25% off any dry cleaning services after that.
A&T Dry Cleaning, the official dry cleaners of the Fish Tank.
You're now diving into the Fish Tank.
Dive up in that fish tank. Who that? Sitting down with Seth Living. Seth. OJ. Juice Man. Ooh, and this is strictly for them true fans, yeah. Golf fans. Number one, of course, y'all. This ain't no ordinary sports talk. Dive up in that fish tank.
Go get your aqua. Welcome back to the Fish Tank. Seth Levitt here with the toughest Dan Marino teammate that has ever hosted the Fish Tank episode, OJ McDuffie. Juice.
Big Seth, what's good, man?
Man, we have had a hell of a season two so far.
So far, so great.
13 episodes in. Unbelievable guest list, and the stories have been crazy.
Yes, they have been, man. A lot of fun along the way, as usual, and the guys really brought it so far this year.
They definitely brought it, and what better time than to maybe look back and reflect a little bit before we finish strong, especially as our Dolphins are surging, man.
Yes, how about that? How about that? A couple wins in a row.
Got a couple dubs.
Yep, and looking good, actually, you know. So we'll see how they finish the season out. You know, I was never for that tanking for Tua.
I know you weren't. You know, and very adamant about that.
And I tell you what, man, our boys are out there playing some ball, man, and I'm proud of them right now. You know, we still got a lot of work to do, obviously.
Right.
But, hey, the progress is amazing. Trust in the process.
Well, trust in the process. It excites me that these guys, this roster that was at the beginning of the year lauded as maybe the worst roster in the history of this franchise and not worthy of a professional team, national media criticizing the Dolphins, saying, you know, former NFLPA members saying that they should, you know, bring down sanctions because it's unsafe. These guys are playing for Coach Flores. And imagine, you know, when Chris Greer gets into that draft in Vegas,
yep,
and has 700 picks in the first three rounds.
Right.
Hopefully we'll have some good football
and
players.
And that's the thing about it, Seth. With the three first-round picks, a couple second-round picks, the Dolphins control the draft still. And that's what we need right there. And a lot of money for free agents. So a
lot of money.
Yeah, it should be a very good offseason. But like talk about, let's finish the season strong.
We got to finish the season strong. Stepped out Outside of our box a little bit. We don't normally talk current team, but we are rooting for those guys. But we definitely got to reflect on what this season two has been so far, and I can't think of a better way to do it than to go back to our season opener when the Dolphins most recent addition to the Pro Football Hall of Fame, your former teammate, the guy who signs my checks, JT, spent a little time with us, and He had a lot of great stories. 2 hours. It was an epic.
Hey, he really sat down and enjoyed himself. I like that, man, because it took us a little while to really mend to the tank.
Yeah, we did. Well, we kind of had to take the tank to him.
Took
the tank to him, to his backyard, to smoke on the water there. But he had so many great stories, but I think the one we're going to talk about was when he mixed it up with a guy.
Mr. Bach.
He mixed it up with a former Fish
That's
Tank
right.
guest
right.
as well, JT and John Bach, an outcome that maybe you wouldn't expect. JT was very candid.
He was
about how that went.
You know, most guys tell a different story.
Yeah, they do.
They do. You know, it's a different story, but he kept it real.
He said he didn't want to piss Bach off in retelling that story. Let's hear this thing.
You know, we had John Bach on in season one, and we know he's a tough guy. You know, and I know you guys got into it your rookie year, and we had Bach on. He was talking about it, and for us, for Seth and I, it seemed kind of Hollywood the way it was. Describing, you know, the fight you guys got into. How do you remember that?
You put a little mustard on the story?
Yeah, it was a lot of mustard, man. It was really, really, you know, I mean, even the words from, you know, the narrative, everything he said was kind of like, come on, man. But it's a story. What are your memories of that encounter?
Well, I didn't hear.
First of all, let's back it up. I mean, I know Tiffany fought your battles before. I know you got your dub with Charlie Batch.
No, I had a lot of dubs between.
Yeah, okay.
Between Charlie Batch and John Bach, I had a lot of dubs.
Don't get it. You got one in Senior Bowl.
Don't get it twisted. You see people see me in the street. Don't be trying me now. My sister ain't around. I don't need her. But I mean, I didn't hear John Bach's episode, so I don't know what he said.
Talk about snapping your neck, I think.
But after...
Well, that was Rodney Harrison.
Oh, Rodney Harrison, that's right.
It wasn't a fight, first of all. It was an ass whooping. So whatever John Bach said, the last thing I'm going to do now is dispute anything he said and have him find me outside.
You don't want him looking for you?
Because I don't want that smoke no more, trust me. There was a... I don't even think the fight was with me. I think it was another one of me farming somebody else's land, because I believe the fight started with him and Zach. Maybe I could be wrong, but...
There was a lot of those, too.
Yeah.
I think I fought Bach once. I might have fought with Bach twice, and once was like super broken up real quickly, so it wasn't a whole lot there. But I think the one that we're talking about was he and Zach were getting into it, and you know how tight we were defensively, and everyone had everybody's back, and we were, you know, so, you know, I told him to cut that shit out or whatever, and the next snap, Zach probably blitzed when he wasn't supposed to and just went right at Bach or whatever, and Bach pushed him or hit him or whatever. Well, I thought I was gonna come jump in and clock Bach. I got the first hit in, and then he proceeded to grab my face mask, and I swear to God, I've never seen anybody throw so many uppercuts in so little time. And he hit me in my stomach, my solar plexus, and my esophagus. But it was like a boomerang. Like, it just kept boomeranging. But the whole time he was holding my face mask and my head couldn't move.
Hey, bobblehead.
Like, this was boomerang before boomerang. He was even out on phones. He wore my ass out. Dude, I wanted to throw up. I had to poop. Like, everything. I couldn't talk. I couldn't breathe. And then I swear, like, when he walked away, I had to look back and be like, who the hell was that?
Right.
Get the license plate on that fucking thing.
You know, I started hallucinating and stuff. And I swear, Bach walked back to the offensive huddle. He was a center. I swear he called the huddle, lit a cigarette, started blowing smoke. And the whole time I'm sitting there on the ground, like, what the hell just hit me? What happened? And I turn around and Zach's looking at me like, you all right? I'm like, bitch, I'm trying to help you out. Where were you at?
Trying to catch your breath. Yeah. Should have stuck with Bach story, I think, actually.
I ain't going to lie. I ain't got no problem with admitting. He wore my ass out. I still don't know how he did it. I don't know. And unfortunately, the Hack Brothers used
somebody
to stop.
Somebody find Dave Hack. Yeah.
The Hack Brothers used to stop the film or something because it wasn't recorded or it was a bad angle.
Nobody got it?
I don't think so, man. It was before the days of all these GoPros and stuff. It was just one eye in the sky. But, man, the end zone and the sideline copy didn't have a good shot of it.
That's good for you, though.
Good for me. I'm one of those guys that can laugh at himself, so it wouldn't bother me now to show people what not to do. Right. So I'm let the young kids learn what not to do. If you get into a fight with a guy with short arms, that's a tough offensive lineman. You got to keep him at distance. I got too close. So that's
when we grab that face mask. It's like, oh yeah,
bro. That's where you think where you think I developed that long arm pass rush from? That was from John Bach. You got to keep their ass away. I learned the hard way.
Man, that was funny as hell. Man.
Oh God, that
was funny as hell. And I can't even think about all the times that he thinks about getting his ass whooped like that.
Right.
You know, in the solar plexus and everywhere he got hit.
Solar plexus. And the vision of Bach walking back and lighting up the cigarette.
They're calling the huddle.
Oh, my God.
Good stuff, bro.
It is really good stuff. Shout out to John Bach. And the lesson to be learned there, right, when you're fighting a guy with short arms.
That's right.
A lot of good lessons
don't
to learn.
Don't fight, Seth. Just don't fight.
Yeah, for me, I just think I got to stay out of fighting altogether. That's the lesson that I learned even before JT shared that story. So some other lessons, though, switching from on the field to off the field, we had Jeff Darlington, who, you know, is a star nationally covering this league, but who spent a lot of time down here in Miami, broke a lot of stories, and Jeff really took us into the life and the mind of a reporter who was probably doing some shit he shouldn't have done.
Right. Right.
Sneaking in and going into people's houses and, well, not going into their houses.
Right, right.
But Jeff wasn't a creeper, I'm sorry, but he was sneaking into their neighborhoods, knocking on their doors.
Yeah, that was funny stuff, but hey, be able to get the story, That's how you get the story, right?
He got the story, he got the job, and look at him now. That's but right. Yeah, Jeff had a couple of real good ones. Let's check it out.
It's not about the reporter. It's about the shit that you cover. That's right. What gets you the awards.
Right, you're only as good as their craziness.
Well, 100%, man. If I was at Florida during this national championship run, I wouldn't have had any good jobs coming, but right. I covered a shit show.
Right.
And the same down here in Miami. So all you aspiring journalists... Don't cover the good stuff.
Right.
You'll find the crazy people. go get yourself the job with the Jets.
One of your, a fan favorite here at the Five Reasons Sports Network, but a guy you work with, Armando Salguero, used to tell me, he goes, what benefits me is the team's either really, really good or really, really bad.
He said it every day.
Yeah. Yep. 8-8 does nothing for my business.
That's right. But what were we talking about? Oh, Manny Wright.
Manny Wright.
So that was like one of my first awards that I'd gotten was Manny Wright. Saban's like, I don't know where Manny is, he was sitting in his press conference and everybody's kind of sitting there just taking, I'm like, well, this is weird, something's off here. So I'm like, I go into like stealth reporter mode back when I was like ambitious. Now I just go grab a microphone and say some shit on TV and
that's it in 30 seconds.
But so I go over to Manny's neighborhood. I found out where he lived.
Oh man, you really went in,
dude. And I see a for rent sign on his window. I'm like, oh, that's weird too. So I call the number on the for rent sign and the landlord's like, yeah, the Dolphins have been paying his rent for the past 4 months. Like, he doesn't have any money, and it was really sad. I mean, it was obviously like, and I'm leaving. And I'm like, I don't know what to do with this. Like, what do I, And I'm leaving the neighborhood, and I see Manny's truck coming back, coming this way. And I'm like, shit, I got to go talk to him. So I spin around, but I couldn't find where his truck went in the neighborhood. And there were these sushi menus on all the doors. They go around and put the menus on the doors. So I went to every door that didn't have a sushi menu because that meant the person had just gotten home. And I knocked on every door that did not have a sushi menu.
How about that reporting 101?
Until a guy said, oh, Manny, yeah, he lives right there. I'm his cousin. I walk over and I knock on the door, and Manny comes to the door and he just tells me everything.
Wow.
I mean, everything.
Wow.
It was crazy.
Now, what kind of does it take some gumption? Like, is there any thought process like, fuck, I don't know if I can knock on this door?
Yeah.
Or, I just wonder what's going through your head as you're about to go ask this guy.
Yeah. I mean, I think especially when, I was raised by my parents to be very like I think that that's what's important about it. When you do knock on the door, you have to be extremely courteous, extremely respectful. You understand that you're trying to do a job, but at the same time, you're covering a human being. It's always about their story. And that was always what it was. I mean, even with Manny, it's like, hey, if you tell me to leave right now, I'm out. I'm out. It's equivalent of me calling your phone. If you don't pick up, same kind of thing. And I remember I did it at Ronnie Brown's house. When he had his contract hold out, I drove to Atlanta and knocked on his door. Next thing you know, I'm sitting next
Ronnie's
to him.
Easy, though, man.
On the couch,
hey,
right.
Come on in.
But
man.
That was like one of the first ones, was knocking on his door. Another time, I'm just going to say, so I, this, do, this, do, I was going to say, I'll just say a Dolphin source had told me, I texted him when Brett Favre was considering, I don't even remember this. There was a second when the Dolphins were interested in Brett Favre or whatever.
Yep.
So someone had told me that I wouldn't close the door on it. And it was an important enough person that I was like, whoa. But he's like, but you can't report that.
Mm.
And I'm like, well, I can't report it if it came from you.
Right.
What if it came from Brett Favre? So I flew to New Orleans and I drove to Hattiesburg and I slept in my car outside of Brett Favre's house.
Holy shit.
And I followed every
stalker,
car.
Jeff Darlington
right,
in the house.
Exactly. I swear, man, it's creepy. And I followed every car that until the car was Favre in the car and he was driving to his high school. And I get out of the car and I'm like, Brett. My name's Jeff Darlington. I'm from the Miami Herald. He goes, Miami, don't you have anything better to do if you're from Miami? And I go, not if you're willing to come back to the NFL, I don't. And he's like, what? And I was like, I've been told by a very authoritative person in Miami that he's interested in having you back. And he's like, no. And he walks to his car and he's going to get in his car. And he turns to me and it was an unbelievable man. He had the devil and the angel on the shoulders and turns to me. He goes, so they said they're interested?
Sure, God. That's
awesome. That
dude.
Is really great.
But sometimes you got to do that. It's crazy. And I don't probably, I think it's just all about finding a way to show respect for the people and give them privacy when it's warranted and requested. And at other times, leads to some good shit.
So as a former PR guy, Juice, I don't know that at the time I would have loved Jeff doing all that stuff, but it's fascinating for me to listen to how he got those stories and what he did.
Oh, yeah, especially now. I mean, it's hilarious, man. And, these guys go in certain trenches now to find stories.
In the trenches.
He 1,000% did that to get the story.
He did. But to his credit, and, Jeff's a likable guy. And I think that, he said, well, why the hell are you flying and just showing up at Brett Favre's, football practice or whatever it is?
But I think there's a certain demeanor, and Jeff's right. You know, you got to do your job, but when you get there, you know, when you get there, can you at least be a guy that's reasonable and make them understand why you're there? And apparently he's been able to figure it out.
No doubt. He's got some great relationships because of that.
He does have some good relationships, and maybe he burned a few here or there.
But that's part of the job too, isn't it?
I guess it depends on your perspective from that. More Ohio guys, though.
That's it. Hey, got to keep those Ohio guys going, man. And we got to get more down here. That's my opinion.
Well, we have one now who's a young leader on this team, and, you know, we did start the show off talking a little bit more about the current Dolphins than we normally do, but we were lucky enough in training camp to spend some time with some of those guys.
Yeah, man, it was so much fun to get back in the building, Seth.
Yeah.
You know, and to see what these guys were going through as young guys and, you know, some of the older guys. But our man Bake, Jerome Baker, man, he is a star in the making.
Not just because he's a Clevelander?
Nope. Okay. Man, or definitely not because he's a Buckeye either.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'm not going to give him that one either.
I will co-sign that. Especially that he shunned Penn State and UF.
Gladly, too. Well, with no problem, he shunned it.
Yeah.
It
yeah.
Was, yeah, so whatever with Bake.
Right. You know what? Let's go to the next. No. Bake still had some great stories, and it was cool to hear from a young guy. You know, we got a lot of these glorious stories from going all the way back to the 70s and what have you, but to hear from this current team, and Bake had a great story about somebody else's rookie experience, and then when he thought that maybe he had ducked all of the rookie hazing, and they still got him.
Doesn't happen like that, bro. They're always looking for
you. They're going to get
you. Especially the top guys.
Yeah, absolutely. But we won as Dolphins fans.
We did. Bottom
so
line.
We're excited to have you here. And this has been our training camp special. And we had the specialists in early. I see Renzo is a veteran PR guy here, the way he stacked the deck in this deal.
Yeah, perfect.
And those guys, their stories were a little slower. And then we had, you know, somebody had to sing the rookie song. And although Alan said that, you know, they don't even let them haze the guys that much anymore.
No.
But do you have any great memories from last year's training camp? I mean, I'm sure it was all just a whirlwind.
Well, my greatest memory wasn't even about me. Last year, we had a guy come in. He had dreads. He's been growing it for like 7 years.
Oh, no.
And he was from Cleveland. He went to Notre Dame College.
Mm-hmm. So who was it? Who was the player?
I forgot his name.
All right, we'll look it up. But we'll cut that out.
Ran him off.
Yeah, so he had dreads.
Clearly he's not still
with the team. His dreads was long. It was like 7 years. You know, he'd been growing for 7 years.
Oh, man.
And he had a bet with when we had Jordan here, is he faster than him? And they gave him a head start, too.
He got a head start and lost?
And he lost. And after that practice, I still got the video. Everybody in the whole team came to the locker room, and it was a bet. It wasn't hazing. It was just
he put it out there. He offered it up. He walked into it.
You know, the vets, they all put money up. It was like, that was real money, like $1,000 each person. So
Monopoly money. They're not really betting like that in NFL locker rooms, man. Yeah. Wow. So, yeah. So he put his hair on the line, and they gave him a head start. What position did he play?
D-line.
He was a D-lineman, and he
lost. What was the distance on that race?
I want to say it was like 40 yards.
40? He got beat. He got a head start.
It was
how long he just grew his hair and finally cut it off. It was definitely funny, but
now cut it off? Who got to actually cut his hair?
The vets. The vets got different pieces. Yeah,
like so cutting the nets down on the championship.
How did he handle it? They get the ladder out. How did he handle it?
He took it like a champ, and they cut it in a style where he had to wear it, and it was definitely bad.
Bad, oh man.
You got video of this?
Yeah, I still got the video. It's still on my phone.
Oh man, we gotta find
I'm glad I came in with a low fade right away, man. Yeah. You know, usually those guys start with that big buzz right down the middle, the reverse mohawk thing, just to get it started, and you really gotta start cleaning up after that. So they didn't do anything to you, obviously. A lot of times, you know, I'm gonna tell you this, we had some guys in the locker room that, even as rookies, you just didn't fuck with him. Don't mess with him, man. It's like that dude right there, Tim Bowens, and dudes like, just don't mess with him, man.
They found out quick with Tim Bowens.
Yeah, they don't. We had a receiver, Yetil Green, with the UM.
That's a great story.
We had one receiver mess with him. He made a rookie mistake of ordering his equipment or his extra stuff from Nike into the locker room. So he was in the training room, and people was going through his box.
Now, Yetil was kind of on the front end of the big receiver.
He was
big
and fast.
You know how
strong.
The league changes and go through these shifts. So they were, I don't want to say little guys, but smaller guys in your era.
Yep.
Right? But Yetil was like yoked.
He was yoked and can run. He's a 4.3 guy, low 4.3 guy, 6.23, just a big receiver, man. And obviously tough as hell.
He was a country boy, too.
Yeah, the boy Charles Dorn, he's tough as hell. So we went through his boxes, and he came back out of the training room. He said, yo, I want all my shit back in my box immediately, right? And I'm like, I got a T-shirt. I put it right back. You know what I mean? Everybody started putting stuff back.
He was a rook.
He's a rook. My boy CJ's like, nah, man, he's a rookie. The hell with that. So, and Tilton will meet me in the went back. So they went back by the pool, right?
Yeah.
Next thing I come back, next day I come back, your teal's yoked sweat. He's like jacked up and stuff. And he said, I told him, Juice. CJ comes limping into the locker room because your teal took him back there and warmed out a little bit. So yeah, we don't mess with some rookies. And I think you'd be that rookie that people wouldn't mess with.
My actual rookie experience, it came at the end of the season. You know, we had the rookie dinner.
Yep. Oh yeah.
I thought we had an understanding, you know, all the rookies of we're not going, the defensive rookies, we're not going. So we all just decided like, we're not going today. We're not going. So I thought we all said we're not going. So it was about, we
you
had to be
to
there.
You believe this was a collective effort.
Yeah, I'm thinking
okay,
like,
okay.
Oh, if we all not going to go, I'm for sure not going to go. I put my phone down the stairs. Anybody that called me is not coming. So it got around like 8 o'clock. I remember Raekwon called me.
Your teammate, your buddy.
Yeah, so I didn't answer. So he texted me and was like, where you at? I'm like, I'm at home.
Where are
so,
you at?
So he was like, yeah, I'm at the dinner. I'm like, oh, all right. Well, so long story short, some of the rookies, I'm not going to put them out there like that, but they end up going to the dinner and, you know, they had to all split the bill. So that next day, that's when we was playing Buffalo.
Oh, so you didn't run over and go. You was like, I'm not going.
I stuck to my guns. I'm
okay,
not going.
Okay.
Worst mistake of my life.
Oh.
So that next day, we was going to Buffalo. I had my bags packed. I was ready to go, you know, all of that. At the time, I had this nice Supreme bag. If you know about Supreme, it's, I pay a lot of money for that
he
bag.
He looked at you. He didn't look at me. Clearly, I didn't.
So I put my keys in there. I put my garage opener in there. I put all my clothes in there.
Oh, shit.
So we went to meetings. I came out. My bag's gone. At this point, when I first got to practice, everybody was like, why you didn't show up? I'm like, I thought, you know, we wasn't going, but whatever. So when I'm thinking like, all right, my bag's not here. I know one of the vets got it. Who has it? And I started thinking like, it's no way I'm going to find out who has it. So I went to Drew. I'm like, can you find out who got it? If you show me who got it, I can get it back.
Oh, you went to Drew. So head of security.
Yeah.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, I don't know if Drew's up to it. Drew's up to it. Nobody can find my bag on the video, whatever.
If Drew couldn't find it, then he was in on it. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
I'm like, okay,
I'm sticking
that's,
to that.
That's fine. So I'm like, you know, it's just a bag. That's the least of my worries. At least I didn't have to pay for no grown men dinner. Fine, whatever. So I didn't pay for the dinner, whatever. So we go to Buffalo after the game. Well, we play the whole game. Fine. I come back to my locker. I have two phones. So one of my phones is gone. I'm like, all right, now we're getting a little too much. Now I'm wondering, like, where's my phone at? Nobody, literally nobody say anything. Like, it's...
You got your bag. You got to be
like,
happy with your bag.
You know what? It's even better because the phone I had, it was older. So the next day, I'm like, we're in the NFL. I can go get another one. Got another one. And it was the end of the season. So I avoided a lot of the different, you know, troubles I had with the vets. But I didn't go to rookie dinner. And,
Did you ever get the bag back?
No, I still don't know.
Now, what was cheaper? What your portion of that dinner would have been, or buying the new phone? Did we figure that out?
Buying the new phone. It was only like $300. It was.
Oh damn!
I did.
Where did they go to dinner?
I don't even know. I didn't care. I wasn't going. Right. But
the principle of the matter. It's principality.
But yeah, I didn't go to the rookie dinner, and I got my phone and my bag took. So that's all good.
All right, not bad.
That's good story.
He had a good season. He had a good rookie season.
That's like a real story.
And you know what? And the more you ball out, the less they mess with you, man. That's
true.
What they start doing.
That's
you know
interesting.
I mean?
They did it at the end of the year, man. I remember being invited to the DB night out. This was Jamar Fletcher's rookie year, and Sam Madison. This is back when they had, what was that place out on the water, Jackson's or whatever. And I'm like, man, I'm looking at the menu and these prices. And Sam's like, no, we got it.
Burton Jacks.
Yeah. Hey, get the serving. You like lobster? Get the surfing turf and eat that. And I'm like, Sam, are you sure, man? Man, I really appreciate it. No, we got you. And everybody's ordering all the DB. And I'm like, man, I'm part of the game. And I mean, like $70 meal and the whole thing. Man, that bill came. They handed it to Fletch. Yeah. Ooh, he was not happy.
No,
he was not happy. But that was at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, some of them dudes get the go orders too. And shit, like.
Yeah, I heard
let
a lot
Lobster
of
Matt come to go.
That.
Yeah, I guess they've changed a lot of that these days. It's probably a good thing though. You shouldn't be taking people's money. That's a little too much.
On 3 yards per carry, we give you a little bit of culture.
I'm in Edinburgh for the world famous Fringe Comedy Festival, which is essentially a cornucopia of comedy, and I am scouting for talent.
Do you measure their 40 time or get their vertical?
No, pretty much not, unfortunately.
Is Benny Hill there?
Benny Hill's dead, buddy.
We also give you the finest in news and analysis of your Miami Dolphins. Listen to us every Thursday and soon every Tuesday and Thursday during the regular season on your favorite podcast provider.
Good design is good business, but great design can be a game changer. Whether you need a new company logo, dynamic presentation decks, or want to bring a Wynwood-style mural to your corporate office or event, Thunderous Genius will exceed all of your expectations. The Thunderous team has worked with your favorite sports franchises, athletes, and entertainers, and can't wait to bring that perfect blend of creativity and structure to you as well. So contact them at ThunderousGenius.com. Say that the Fish Tank sent you and receive a 50% discount off your first project. Half off! So what are you waiting for? It's time to get Thunderous. And now, on to the show.
Man, what a great young man that is, man.
He is, man. Easy to cheer for.
He really is, man. And what people don't know about Baker is that not only is he a good football player, he's a leader on that team, but he does a lot in the community as well, Seth. And,
he does.
That's what you have to do. You can't just do it on the field. You got to do it in the community, too. And that's one thing that Baker's done a great job of doing. And I expect to see him around here for a long time.
I hope so.
Leading this community and leading this football team.
I hope you're right. You know, there has been a lot of transition with where we're at. We understand some of the moves we might be like better than others, but he's a guy that you want to see in Orange Knoxville.
I think he's one of Flo's guys.
So you talked about Flo, another guy we had in the tank, Bo. Kim Bo Camper. That was really weak. Yeah, that was really weak. That's why I don't do that. We'll leave that up to SoD and Morlon moving forward with the rhyming. But Kim Bo Camper came in, career broadcaster now after being an all-time great with the Dolphins, and it was awesome to have Bo in. I think anybody who listened to that episode understood exactly why he's so good at what he does. And he told a lot of great stories. But man, oh man. Maybe one of my favorite stories in 50-something episodes of The Fish Tank was the story about the Kuchenberg family.
Oh, my goodness. They are a trip. Boy, are they a trip.
You know, Bob Kuchenberg and his, you know, I didn't know him as a player, but as a retired guy and, you know, God rest his soul, a little gruff, a little rough around the edges, maybe not such a happy-go-lucky guy.
Right.
But what a story.
That family is off the chain. Bo told it really good.
Bo always does, and there's no way we could do it justice. So let's hear it from Kim again.
But Bob became a very good friend of mine, and you know what? It's we lost Bob a couple months ago, and I really think part of what happened with Bob, you know, in my mind, Bob should be in the Hall of Fame, and I'm so adamant about that, is that, you know, I've kind of in my mind made a commitment. I'm not going to walk into that Hall of Fame until Bob Kuchenberg's bust is in that Hall of Fame. That's how strongly I feel about the type of player he was. First of all, he's one of the best players I've ever played against. And I only played against him in practice, but maybe the toughest guy I've ever played against. You know, so Cooch, one of their Super Bowl years, he broke his wrist during the playoffs. And they said, you're done. Can't play. He goes, no. I'm playing. And they go, well, you got a broken wrist. There's nothing. He goes, well, you need to figure out something because I'm playing. And they're going to the Super Bowl. I'm playing. I don't care what you say. So they went in, did surgery on his wrist, went in, and took all the marrow out of the bone in his wrist, whatever bone it was that he fractured. And they took a titanium shaft and stuck it in that gap where they'd taken all that marrow out of his bone, wrapped him up, and he played, ended up playing. Then when I'm playing with him, and he was an all-pro at tackle, guard, tackling both guards, all-pro, not a pro bowler, all-pro.
The best of the best.
Played in every Dolphin. He was a part of every Dolphin Super Bowl. 5 Super Bowls Bob played in. 2 that they won. 3 that we didn't win. And played with numerous injuries. He was just that old school tough guy. And when I was playing with him, he broke his back. You know, you see your spine. And there's those two little knobs that stick out. They're called condyles. I learned this from, you know, what going through his. You know, as you become almost a doctor.
Right. Damn right.
Yeah, after 10 years in the NFL, you kind of got you got a degree in kinesiology, and you're a bit of a doctor, right? You can diagnose. So those things snapped and broke, and that's where all your muscles attached to. So he did that during a game. So at the end of the game, they put him in a cast from his waist to his neck. And then the next Saturday, they cut it off, and he played again on Sunday.
What the hell?
Then they put the cast on again, did it all week. 5 weeks he did that. 5 weeks he stayed in a cast from Sunday night until Saturday night. And every Sunday he played and didn't miss a snap, didn't miss a game. So one time I asked him, I said, God damn, Bob. I said, you know, you're the toughest son of a bitch I've ever been around. You know, I said, where'd this come from? I mean, how'd you, and he's like, you know, he's a, played at Notre Dame. He's an Indiana guy, you know, Midwestern. That's what he was. And he said, well, you know, maybe it came from my family. He goes, my dad was a pretty tough guy. I go, what was it about your dad that was so tough? He said, well, he had a strange career. You know, the career he was in was a little different. I go, what do you mean? He goes, well, he was this carny guy. Carny guy.
Carny.
He goes, yeah. He goes, you know, he'd go around and go to carnivals and county fairs and state fairs. And I said, well, what's this have to do with? He goes, well, you know, I said, well, what did he do in the carnivals? He said, well, he got shot out of a cannon. What? That's what he did for a living. Bob Kuchenberg's dad got shot out of a cannon. You know, they had the cannon. They would hook it up to a truck and, you know, put a little red flag coming out the back and hook it on a truck and drive around to different carnivals, town to town, and do this.
And shoot and Mr. Kuchenberg out of the cannon.
Go with him, and he'd get shot out of a cannon. That's what they did. And so I said, God damn, Cooch, that's the strangest thing I've ever heard, you know? So he starts telling me stories about it. He says, you know, one day we're in some podunk town or whatever, and, you know, Bob was out of college and just kind of getting started in the NFL or just getting ready to get started in the NFL. And he says, so we go in, and it's time for my dad to get shot out of the cannon. And he's over there puking, and he's sick, and he can't do it. And you know, so someone's got to get shot out of the cannon. So Bob says, well, look, I'll go in there. And they go, no, Bob, you know, you got a football career. We can't put you down the cannon. So he goes, well, who's going to do it? And so his Uncle Jimmy's over there. And Jimmy goes, I'll go in the cannon. So they threw him in the outfit and Uncle Jimmy, and they put a ladder up there. He climbs up the ladder and goes in the cannon. Guy climbs up the ladder, you know, got the plunger. You got to pack him in a little bit, right? So they kind of pack him in a little bit. And there's a net. There's a net on the other end for him to land in. Well, what they didn't realize, what they forgot was that the dad weighed about probably 280.
Oh, shit.
And Uncle Jimmy weighed about 135 or 140, oh, no. Right? So sure enough, they pull the rope, and fucking Uncle Jimmy comes flies right over the net and hits a brick wall, right? Hits a brick wall and starts sliding down the brick wall, rips the side of his cheek off so badly that they had to take off part of his butt and attach it to his cheek to rebuild his cheek. And Jimmy was a bit of an asshole before that happened, but more so of one after that. So I go, God damn, Coots, that is the craziest story I've ever heard. And he goes, well, if you think that's crazy, you should meet my brother Rudy Kuchenberg. Now I'd met Rudy. When I met Rudy, he was a fireman in Chicago. They were Chicago guys. Rudy was a fireman in Chicago. Played semi-pro football up there, and I think he played for the Bears maybe for a year or something on the taxi squad or whatever. So I go, what the hell could Rudy do?
Right.
Your dad getting shot out of a cannon. He said, well, Rudy's got a very unique talent.
Come on.
And I said, well, what kind of talent does he have? He said, well, Rudy can pee lengthwise over a Cadillac without getting a drop on it. I said, what? He said, yeah, Rudy can pee lengthwise over a Cadillac without getting a drop on it. I go, bullshit. No way. What? And he goes, yeah, I'm telling you. So I've got this now. So now I've got this in my mind. So now, like, 2 or 3 years later, I'm in Fort Lauderdale. Mr. Laughs east, yeah. Right? And I look over, and who's sitting next to me? Rudy Kuchenberg. So I start talking to Rudy. Like I said, I'd met him. So I was talking to him, and I start filling him with beer. I'm starting buying him beers, you know? So we're in there about an hour, and I said, Rudy, you know, your brother told me something about you that I'm not buying it. He goes, what is it? I go, he says, what is it? I said, you know, he told me that you can pee lengthwise over a Cadillac without getting a drop. And he goes, what about that? What?
You can't?
I go, you can? He says, yeah. I go, well, let's go. He goes, no, I'm not going to. So I keep feeding him beer. So finally he goes, let's go. So we go out in the parking lot, and we're looking. No cab. Couldn't find it. But there was a Chevy Impala, the old school Chevy Impala.
It'll do. It'll do.
And now, when we're talking about Cadillacs, we're talking back in the 60s and 70s now. You know, those big Brohams.
Oh, yeah.
Long, had the big wings in the back. And, you know, it wasn't these little short Cadillacs they got right now.
Right.
It was a lengthy car, right? So we couldn't find a Cadillac, but there was a cobalt blue, it was beautiful Impala sitting in there. So we, you know, and we knew the guy that owned the restaurant. So, but because it was parked into a parking lot, a parking space. So we went in, found the guy who owned it, and said, hey, can you back that car out a little bit, you know? And he goes, we got a little experiment here. So he says, yeah, sure. So he backs it out. So all of a sudden, Rudy's standing there, and I look over, and he unzips his pants and turns sideways and kind of, and all of a sudden, it starts coming out. It's like a fire. And he wasn't that big, you know, just so you know. It had nothing to do with size. But he starts on the side, and then he kind of arcs it up, boom, goes right over the car,
come on.
Get a drop on it. When it starts to die, pulls it back in. I go, God damn, man, that is freaking crazy. So I've told this story. I've told this story a couple times, and no one believes me. Everyone believes. Everyone thinks I'm making the story up. And I go, hey, I'm just telling you what.
Of all the shit you can make up.
You know, bullshit. There's no way, no way that happened. So a few months ago, as I told you, we lost Bob, and so I was you know, fortunate enough to MC. I don't know what you call it for his memorial that we did in Miami Lakes, and Rudy was there. And I've told the story to Tom Garfinkel, the president and CEO of the Dolphins. And he's, you know, not bullshit. No, the story's good, but I said, Tom, there's Rudy right there. You go over and ask him. So Tom goes over and asks Rudy, says, hey, you know, Rudy, not for nothing. And then maybe it's not the appropriate place.
Maybe this isn't right.
You know, Kim's been telling the story about, you know, you, you know, he goes, yeah. 21 feet, 3 inches, not including the splash, he says. Right?
He's worked on his response, obviously.
So Garfinkel comes over and says, he did it. And he says, not only that, but Rudy says, well, if you think that's good, you should see my Uncle Bob.
Oh, come on, man.
Uncle Bob's stream is so fast, he can knock the hubcap of a car off of a car as it drives by.
What a family.
What was the family reunion at the Kuchenberg household like when these guys all got together? Hey, come up with
sure
this
it
shit.
Was very unique and very colorful.
Oh, God. So Bob was the most normal of the group.
Yeah, he was. Exactly.
That is crazy.
I don't even know what to say. I've heard it a few different times in an editing and heard the show. I don't even know what to say about the Kuchenberg family, from cannons to Cadillacs to, you know, I don't know. I mean, cannons, sometimes I got to pee real bad.
Yeah, the cannons, man.
But the
cannon. Come on, bro. Shout out a cannon. You got to be kidding me.
Shout out a cannon and shooting like a cannon. I'm still a little speechless with it. But dang, the Kuchenberg family, man, just a fish tank classic. It should really – I'm going to say right now, Juice, and we could talk about it. I feel like this story should be in every best of moving
forward. I think so. We're going to the best of the best of.
God, it was good. God, it was good.
Good job, Bo.
But we had another storyteller in, guy who was your equipment manager a minute, Bobby Monica.
Bobby. Bobby has more stories than we can even think of, man.
And yeah, I felt like some of the best stuff came out after we hit stop.
Yeah. He held a lot back once. We're going to get him back in the tank. But I tell you what, the Shula story was just amazing, man. And I tell you, Bobby brought it. Bobby brought it. And to be yelled at by the greatest coach of all time as an honor, basically.
It was an honor. I think in that moment, though, it didn't seem like it was so much
fun. Not so much at that point.
But I can't, you know, Bobby and just the character that he is. And you know, you played for Coach Shula. I never had an opportunity to work for him. But just as serious and demanding and authoritative. And, you know, I love that you asked Bobby what was that like with those two of those guys sharing that. Bobby let us know.
Yeah.
Yeah, those jokes didn't – they didn't cut it when Coach was in the room.
No, smart man.
But William Judson did cut it.
He need to cut it.
Yeah,
literally,
sure,
man.
Did.
That was
sure
that was
did.
Hilarious, man. Right, great story. And then Judson told it himself, man, so it was great.
He did. Because Bobby couldn't quite remember, right?
Right,
he wasn't
right.
Sure if it was Judson or Don McNeil, and Judson did confirm a few episodes later. Well, let's hear it.
So how was that little yin-yang? How was that balance between you and Coach and your relationship with Coach?
Well, it started out, you know, my dad was a coach for 40 years, okay? My dad did the draft for the Packers for 16 years.
Oh, no kidding.
Coach Lombardi had Pasta Azul at my house, you know what I mean? He knew Coach Lombardi, all this stuff. So,
wow.
But for me, I was working for Don Shula, you know, yeah. So it was cool as shit to get yelled at by Don Shula. For the first 10 years, I thought my first name was fucking. So, but the whole idea was, get the job done. Coach wanted you to get it done. Just don't let him find out how you got it done. Sometimes you had to, you know, do stuff. But you know, the best thing I can say about Coach is he ripped your ass, you know, and he was on you all the time and he kept you on your toes. But nobody outside of that team could mess with you. You know what I mean? Right. Somebody came at you that wasn't one of us, he jumped their ass.
Yeah, so he had your back.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, that's all you can ask for. Coach Shula, man.
First of all, you gotta give, like, Bobby does a great Shula impersonation.
Oh, you gotta
as
call
well.
Eddie White. You know, yeah. Eddie White?
Eddie White's got
the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're going, let me see. I first get there and we're playing in Buffalo. Now, remember the old Buffalo locker room had the lockers going across ways?
Right.
So it kind of split it in two. So it was one of my first games, Monday Night Football. And we had the trunks there. We didn't start picking up laundry till Coach was done with his speech. So we're winning at halftime. We come in, we got roasted. So we end up losing. So it ain't like the Dolphins lost on Monday Night Football. It's Dolphins fucked Coach Shula, made him look bad on Monday Night Football. Right, right. So he was pissed. So the defense was on the back end, and I'm sitting there in front of – they had stools back then. Bocamper, Betters, Baumhauer, you know, all them guys are sitting in a row on the stools. Everybody's sitting down like this. So I'm sitting on the trunk, and I didn't want to open the lid to get the clothes until he was done. So D-Mac and Judson are over on the side, Don McNeil and William Judson. Remember the tape sharks?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The cut through tape. With the razor blade on?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So the guys used to tape their wrist like this, put tape on their wrist.
Right.
So it got kind of rolled up. So I forget who it was. It was McNeil or Judson. They were helping each other. One was helping the other one cut this thing. So he's got like this. He's going like this. And it finally catches, the razor catches. Boom! Right up his nose with the razor blade. So he starts with a high pitch, like, on his nose. Now, instead of just getting a towel and put it over, he goes into the shower that's all tile, and it's echoing.
And blood, it's screaming.
So Coach Shula comes around a corner, right? And he's like, who the fuck is talking while I'm talking? And the first cat he sees is me sitting on that trunk, and he goes, was it you? And he points in my face. His finger was like an inch from my face and looked like a big sausage, right? And I was like, so I'm like, I was trying to say no, sir, you know? And I was like, no, sir. Came out real high. And Bo Camber, Bomber, and all them guys fell off their stools into their locker. They were laughing so hard. He went bananas.
That's amazing.
Coach, no joke, man.
Oh, my God. Coach, I was so scared, man.
I think the imagery that Bobby paints with the sausage finger in his face.
Man.
And Coach Shula. And I love that Bobby's voice went so high. He sounded like a 13-year-old
getting
puberty.
Scolded, man. Yeah, man. Yeah, that's the principal. That was the man right there.
And there's no way those guys ever let him live that down.
No, he's still hearing it to this day, and he reflects on it.
Yeah, he did reflect on it. And I'm glad that William Judson's doing all right, man. Yeah. That, you know, he showed – when we saw him, he showed no signs of that injury.
That's right. Y'all will try to cut his nose off.
Well, we're almost at a close here of this best of, and it's been a blast. But I want to bring one more story into the tank. And there were a lot of great ones. And, you know, so many of these have been Dolphin story. But Randall Thrill Hill had some great Dolphin stories and had some amazing stories about what he does now in his Jack Ryan-like life.
Correct.
But his Hurricane days cannot be ignored.
Oh, man.
The six shooters.
Bro.
And the recruiting and just those days where they were, you know, I don't call them bad boys.
It's a wild bunch of great players, man.
That's really what it was.
They went out there and lit it up, man. They had a lot of fun doing so.
And I don't think that there was any moment that displayed that more than that Cotton Bowl. And Thrill running through that tunnel and then coming back out, like you said, with the six shooters and just hearing how all of that went down.
Right. That was a great story, man. Randall told it very well.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. Let's take a listen.
Especially when you talk about playing against teams such as a Penn State or a Notre Dame or a Florida State.
What about a Texas?
That's now, you funny. Guys took a whole different – Texas wasn't ready for you guys went up there. Let's talk, please.
1991. Oh,
please talk about that game.
The state of Texas wasn't ready.
That's what I'm saying. Hey, these brothers rolled in there.
Well, everyone was mad. And I remember the night – okay, leading up – I mean, and Juice, you know this. A bowl week is a series of, your practices and having fun, but it's also series of different events that you have with the opposing team. And we were told to be on our best behavior.
wait.
So we were. So some events we went to,
best behavior.
They were talking. I mean, University of Texas was talking all mad crap everywhere.
You can say shit.
Okay, mad shit everywhere. Okay. And what happens is, leading up to the game, it just boiled over. I mean, literally, it just boiled over because we come out for warmups and they're still talking shit. And we go back in the locker room, some of the seniors who get ready to leave who don't really care at this particular point. We know we're going to get drafted. We know we've graduated. So we know what was going on. And we looked at each other and said, okay, we invented this. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, this just, they're trying to, it's like you trying to beat a man, but you haven't beat the man. And by the way, the chances of them beating us was simply astronomical, baby. But, so we come out and I remember, Robert Bailey, just like on the documentary, he comes in, he looks at me, he says, hey, Randall, I'm telling you right now. And Lamar was standing right next to me. He says, whoever catches this ball, I'm knocking their ass out. And I looked at him and I said, man, you crazy, man. And Lamar started laughing. Lamar said, you gonna knock him out? Hey man, do your thing, baby. And that just led up into the whole frenzy of all the penalties over what 100 some yards penalties. But if you look at that video, if you look at that game, the quarterback did not throw me the ball all game.
The quarterback.
The quarterback. Now, you got to understand this.
We're not mentioning who the quarterback is?
Well, that was Craig Erickson.
Craig, wasn't it? Yeah. By the way, Bailey did knock the guy out on
the
opening kickoff.
Of course, of course. He said
he called the knockout.
So let it be done. So, but Craig, and Juice knows how it is. When you're in the huddle, sometimes you have little mini, oh, not with Dan, but you may have mini riots in the huddle. And we used to have a bunch of riots in the huddle. Oh my goodness, bro. Especially when Jimmy Johnson left and Dennis Erickson came in, because like 60 or 70% of the plays that he called, we changed. And I remember the very first game we played, and yes, I will be coming back to Texas. I just got a lot of stories. We played against Wisconsin, and we crushed Wisconsin like 50 something to like 6 or something like that. The next day in practice, Coach Erickson is like, hey, we had a great game and great yardage, and we didn't have a lot of penalties. But
what was that shit you were running, bro?
He literally said, he says, hey, but you guys changed a lot of my plays. And we said, okay. And then he says, well, hey, and you guys have these hand signals. Can you at least teach me that?
Yeah, he does.
No, coach said, can you teach me the hand signals?
No, we can't. No. Hey, listen, it is.
Can you teach me the hand signals?
No, we're not teaching. I mean, we were out there like catcher and pitcher.
Yeah.
We shake receiver. We standing out there, and sometimes Craig will give it, and we shake it off. Okay, there we go.
Like Sandlot, I like it.
We used to have fun, man. Because
I had to ask him for the hand signals.
It's funny because the game of football and you know, getting back to the youth who are listening to this broadcast, it's a lot of fun. But you have to become a student of the game. If you're not a student of the game, you will not be successful. You have to know the X's and the O's. You need to study the playbook even when you're not in the meeting rooms. You need to understand that playbook. And I'm not saying go over your coaches, but know it just as well or even better than the coaches, because you are on the field. And that's one of the things that I don't like about college football now. And I'm sure Juice will sustain on this one, because it kills me when they're standing there at the line of scrimmage, and to get a change of play, they have to look at the sideline to get
everybody.
Get the hell out of here. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Can you imagine Dan Marino looking at the sideline trying to get a play?
Yeah, they see a picture of Beyonce. Yeah. Oh, okay. Beyonce? Okay.
Yeah, come on, bro. I mean, are you kidding me? That's the dumbest thing I've ever seen before. I don't like it. And I guess it's what's in trend right now.
Yeah. Well, they don't prep kids for the next level, which they don't care about in the college game.
Right.
You know, some colleges but they don't prep them for the next level doing stuff like that. You know, like the whole shotgun thing. But I'm with you, man. It's funny to see these kids out here, you know.
You know,
they're probably
like
trying to avoid having the mutiny,
right.
And not knowing the calls that their own players are making. That's what they're avoiding.
You just brought up a good point, though, Juice. I thought you said I did.
crazy. Man.
I was doing an interview with Lamar Thomas, and one of the questions we asked him was, "What is the teaching now of wide receivers?" And he says, "Well, it seems like nowadays they're and by the way, we'll come back to the Cotton Bowl.
Appreciate that.
It seems like nowadays they're teaching receivers how not to get open and just throw a back shoulder throw. No, Juice beat people at the line of scrimmage. Urban Fryer beat people at the line of scrimmage, got open, got that separation, so the quarterback can lay the ball in there. Now it's okay, well, if you don't get open, we just throw a back shoulder throw.
You
get
open.
The hell out of here. I mean, am I right, bro?
Yeah, you're right. It's
especially
a
now with all big the rules. Yeah. The defenders can't even touch
the ball. They don't teach you how to get open. Randall was really good at when you get off to stack that guy. These guys don't care about stacking anymore. You know, that means getting on top of that DB and then giving the quarterback an alley or a lane to throw. Now they just let you get covered and try to throw back shoulder all the time. You don't have to work.
That's not a route.
Yeah, you don't
That's
have to work.
That's not a route. When young kids ask me about how to run a route, I mean, you look at the Cotton Bowl, you look at 3rd and 43 Notre Dame, you look at what Juice, a foot technician, I mean, you get open first, and then you get the separation so the quarterback can get the ball in there.
Right.
Not, okay, well, I'm side by side with a defender, and I'm going to just throw a back shoulder throw.
Yep.
Get the hell out of
here. Yeah, that's changed a lot.
But even when you look at the whole Cotton Bowl and the whole tunnel thing, and know there was no penalty thrown.
So, yeah,
it was
that.
Totally legal back then. We changed all those rules. That's what university.
That's what it is. Yeah, that's right.
We went to school that in a team that when you think you have all of the answers. We rewrote the questions. That's what we did.
So Craig Erickson threw you open.
He threw me open. That's a good one,
right? He just slid that in there.
I just watched the video. He had a guy by about 15 yards.
Yeah.
Did Jerome have money on that one too?
But no, the whole tunnel thing was not pre-planned. You know, I'm very spontaneous. I'm very animated. And yeah, I went through the tunnel and I turned around and gave him a
You're
magnet.
Way up the tunnel.
He just kept running.
That's another 50
I
yards.
I thought he was leaving
least.
The stadium.
That was like 50 yards past the end zone. Oh, man. Randall had a hell of a career at the U, man.
He did,
He really did, man. And that kind of capitalized it for him, man. And, you know, thinking about it, man, he actually came out for the Dolphins wore number 81.
You know what I mean? Said that.
Yeah, so there's a lot of times where I got talked about that I get cards with Randall picture on them.
That's funny to me, man.
And then you guys
roomed together in his second go around.
We
did.
Randall didn't like football much, like we talked about. But hey, it's okay. We got along. There's some more stories that are coming up in the second half of the season.
Yeah.
About guys that got into fights.
Yes.
Over what they're watching on TV on Saturday. So we're gonna.
This is
true. A little teaser right there for second half of the season.
Listen, season two. There's gonna be another best of, and we could do it already with the guys that we've had, but this was a great bunch. And I have to say, with Thrill, he had so many stories. He kept interrupting shit. Like, I was like, yo, I want to hear about the Cotton Bowl, but then he'd go into this and then he'd go into that, and then all of a sudden but he did bring it back. He did bring it back. Randall was great. Bo was great. JT, everybody. I mean, just when you look back at that guest list, Juice.
A great start, man.
It really has been.
Darlington and Chambers and those guys, man. These guys brought it, man. We got more guys that are ready to come on. And that's the best thing about it, Seth. We're halfway through this season, but guys can't wait to get in the tank. And that's the fun part about the whole thing.
Yeah, it really has been fun reliving these stories. And when other guys have heard it, and guys get mad at us that they haven't had a chance to get on. That's what it's all about. Now, a guy he has been a season two guy, but we didn't highlight him in this episode. But I think that if we're going to do best ofs, we have to play the remix of the theme song. Solo D did us right.
He did.
He did us right. It has been something that I think our fans, our listeners, have enjoyed almost as much as the show has been Solo's theme song.
Yep.
But Ultimate, Morlon Greenwood.
Ultimate.
He did us right.
He did do us right, man.
So we're going to let Ultimate bring us out of this thing.
You know something, man. Welcome to the fish tank. Blah, blah. You might drown if you think you don't ready for the fish tank. Seth Levitt and old Jimmy Duffy stay rocking the mic like Tupac and Biggie. Them thank me for coming, they know semi busy. They start the interview, them know semi ready. On the fish tank, them a show me love. Feel like me sitting on the breakfast club. Now let's go back. 2003 against the Cowboys, we're playing in the throwback. Ricky William run pon them, it looks sick. 3 TD chamber fun them get lit. Madison plays certain, got the pick. ZTMG Junior make hits, make the back them say ow. Looking back on all the haters, tell them watch me now. Thanks to the fish tank for this interview. To the Dolphin fans, me give thanks to you. It's going down in the fish tank. Make sure you can't swim in the fish tank. Seth Levy don't play in the fish tank. OJ go hard in the fish tank. Make sure you don't drown in the fish tank. You gotta think fast in the fish tank. Seth Levy don't play in the fish tank. Mike Duffy go hard in the fish tank. You know it's Ultimate. Big, big, big fish tank. Yeah. Big, big, big fish tank. Uh-huh. Big, 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 big fish tank. Seth Levitt, big fish tank. OJ McDuffie, big fish tank. You know. Big, big, big fish tank. Dan Marino, big fish tank. Big, 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 big fish tank. Big up to Jason Taylor, Hall of Famer. Big up to undefeated Dan Shula. Big up to 6'7" Darrell Gardner. Big up to my quarterback Jay Fila. Big up to all of the players them a try come back and they want them supporting right round the clock. Big up to Timbo, Debo, Lick running back down like Debo, Prince Adawale, Agunlaye. People, do you understand the name when me say Jamar Fletcher, Travis Minor, Larry Chesser? Can't forget about Syracuse, Larry Zanka, and Rob Conrad, legendary Dan Marino, Brendan, Ian Mendejo, Big Gino, Femi, Derek Rogers, and not more. Support the foundation, got the youth, them want more. All of them born for big champs. MG52 free football camps. Give away scholarship on the fish tank. You know, it's Ultimate. top runs going down in the fish tank. Make sure you can't swim in the fish tank. Fifth Levy don't play in the fish tank. OJ go hard in the fish tank. Make sure you don't drown in the fish tank. You gotta think fast in the fish tank. Fifth Levy don't play in the fish tank. Mike Duffy go hard in the fish tank. You know it's ultimate. Big, big, big fish tank. Big, big, big fish tank. Big, 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 big fish tank. Fifth Levy, big fish tank. OJ, Mick Duffy, big fish tank. Big, big, big fish tank. You know Marino, big fish tank. Big, 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 big fish tank. You know it's ultimate. Big bad and Paul Pierce, colorful roll with Excalibur. Big up to man like Jim Beats that drafted me. Big up to Seth Levitt. Big up to all the Miami Dolphin organization. Big up to the fish tank. Blah, blah.